Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 911. This episode is Taryn Killam.
Legitimately one of the funniest people I have ever met.
So funny and so nice. And we, Lydia and I went to see, Lydia's been hosting Scream Fest, which is a 9-day film festival the TCL Chinese Theaters here. And it's like all horror movies, like classic horror movies, indie horror movies. And so we just went to see Child's Play in the middle of the day. And the director, whose name is Tom Holland, the director, not Tom Holland, the Spider-Man. Tom Holland, the director who directed Child's Play, was there and spoke afterwards. Child's Play totally holds up on the big screen, by the way. It's great. Because it's before, although Cult of Chucky, which is the recent one, is really fun. It's before Chucky got super snarky.
Yeah.
So, but it still totally holds up. Also, Cult of Chucky, still really good. You should see it. That's fun. But when we were leaving, we saw they were setting up for the premiere for this movie, Killing Gunther, which Taryn wrote and directed, and has an amazing
he's in it
and it has an amazing cast of hilarious people that you will enjoy. It's available on iTunes, Amazon Video, and YouTube. But just like wrote a movie, directed a movie, made a thing himself. I'm telling you, people to do that all the time. Taryn Killam, use him as an example. he is blazing a trail for you as a young creator. Speaking of which, what do we have on the Nerds Community Corkboard?
So we got one that's really cool today. This person writes in, I have obsessive compulsive disorder. I've worked at the same company for 17 years, but in the past year, my OCD and anxiety have gotten a lot worse. So after 6 months, I had to take a leave of absence in order to focus on my mental health. During this time, I realized that I'd feel healthiest and happiest if I were able to work for myself. I've sold art to friends and family for several years, but have never tried to reach a larger audience. So during my sabbatical, I decided to finally give it a shot. I built and launched my website, Soma79.com, and that's S-O-M-A, where I'm now selling art. They said one piece that they have for sale was directly inspired by something you said during Anna Kendrick's episode.
What?
While discussing the general state of discourse in the country, Chris, you made a comment that the moral high ground is the new drug. So they made it a piece of artwork based on that. And I'll show it to you after we record this. But yeah, definitely, the artwork is amazing. So check it out at Soma79.com.
Fantastic, and good job for taking control of your mental health and doing something constructive.
And like knowing what's best for you, too.
That's a very...
And taking that risk.
It's very hard to be able to have that perspective on yourself to do that. So it's, you know, and it's very inspirational. When other people hear that, I guarantee that is going to help other people deal with their own mental health issues. So that is really fantastic. That kind of thing really makes me happy and sort of makes me feel like, of all the things that, you know, we get to see and do on the podcast, stuff like that is the most fulfilling to me. It's like, these are real people with real lives being affected to live better lives. It just makes me so happy. This episode brought to you by LinkedIn. Have you tried to hire someone lately? It's hard. You got to post to job boards. You hope you find the right person for the job. But how often do you check job boards? All right. For most people, it's very occasional. But there's a place where people go to grow professionally and explore job opportunities. In fact, 70% of the U.S. workforce is there, and it's LinkedIn. So you already know it's the world's largest professional network, but it's also a better way to find great talent. So just, you know, hundreds of thousands of businesses who have posted on LinkedIn jobs over the past year can tell you 22 million professionals view and apply to jobs on LinkedIn every week. And because it considers skills and experiences and location and more to match and promote your job to potential candidates, businesses rate LinkedIn jobs 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. A business is only as strong as its people, because businesses are made up of people. They're made up of humans. And you got to be able to rely on those humans. So every hire matters. don't settle for posting and hoping the right person just trips over your post. Go to linkedin.com/Nerdist, get a $50 credit toward your first job post. That's linkedin.com/Nerdist for your $50 credit today. Terms and conditions apply. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 911 with Taryn Killam returning to the Nerdist Podcast. Katie, we'll roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Let's talk about you.
Okay.
Today.
Oh,
this
wow.
is about you.
The ghosts of the therapists are all around us.
Why are you so angry?
You know, I think it goes back to my father.
Okay. Well, your voice quivered a little bit when you said that.
So I'm overcompensating.
You're so fucking nice.
I see a motorcycle helmet and I see a protective leather jacket.
This is correct.
You are a brave person for riding a motorcycle in Los Angeles.
Thank you very much.
Home of very poorly done streets, a lot of construction, and people who don't give a fuck when they're driving around.
And red asphalts 1-7.
Did you watch Red Asphalt?
Of course. Of course. Yeah.
Why did they show that to kids?
It's awful. It's horrific to scare them. And it worked. I drive terrified.
But it wasn't. It didn't scare kids. It scarred.
Yes.
For anyone who has, I don't know if they still show. I feel like
That's
for some reason now people, some parent complained at some point.
I don't even know what the process is. It's changed so much where you can't have kids your own age and for like until you're 18 or, you know, you're like.
I remember, I was 15 taking driver's ed, and they showed us Red Asphalt. No one was prepared for it. And it was an old film strip, and it's police footage it's police accident footage. And I still have burned into my brain like a teenage girl who essentially was just folded under the steering column and just dead-eyed staring at the camera. Is there one that sticks out for you?
Yeah, and you know what it is? It's like there's blood. But, you know, they advertise it as red asphalt, but it's more the angles of limbs, the unnatural angles of legs.
Yes.
And there was a girl thrown through a windshield and a leg, just, you know what I mean? And like maybe a third of her covered in a thing, but just hair covering face. Yeah. It's
and this
horrifying.
Was pre-internet, guys, so you couldn't just see this stuff. You weren't really prepared to see it. Yeah. I remember everyone it was just silent.
Yes.
When everyone left.
It was horrible. Yeah, it was so gruesome. Like intentionally gruesome.
Have you ever thought about naming a band Red Asphalt?
It's
I feel like there's got to be
right
a name.
It's got to be.
Someone.
Yeah.
Can you see if there's a Red Asphalt band? And there 100% has to be.
It was a series, so there are sequels. Or
it was almost like you're just showing us sanctioned Faces of Death.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is a band called Red Asphalt. Of course there is.
What do they play? They have a...
Of course they're metal.
Of course they're good.
Yeah. Little on the nose, guys. Little on the nose there. Could have been country or like...
We are Red Asphalt! Everybody in the club slowly puts their drinks down.
Oh, just gets sad. Everyone doesn't understand why, but they're just really sad.
Aww.
Even for metal fans, that's a bit much.
Oh, and they have some hits. A car wreck. Motorcycle accident has 15 million views on YouTube.
Oh, and Limb Twitch. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
I like that. It was a B-side, but I like that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a B-side. In other words, like the person was literally a B-side.
Yes, exactly. It was the B-side of their body. The body side.
The
run over by the...
And the grossest thing about it is that it was like that look that people try to affect with filters today.
Sure.
But just that old film, you know,
grainy,
some poor fuck had to go out there with an old gold camera.
Totally.
And just
from the morgue department showed up. Someone in the morgue department just to catalog pieces.
Yeah.
And they say, look at this. Look at these images.
No.
Make sure to signal 500 feet before an intersection.
What if they had to take it to like Fox Photo or something? Did some poor burnout and like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, the Grand Canyon. That looked like a nice trip. What's this next one? Oh, God.
They come in to get the film and the kid's just, his legs are just swinging from the rafters. He just couldn't take it.
But the photos are finished and taped
to
the shoe.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, that's how professional they are. He waited.
Let people learn from this.
Process the film strip and then hung himself with the rest of it. That's what happened. It's so fucked up. I mean, I guess it's, Do you? You have kids.
I have two children.
And
yeah.
So, do you believe? Do you believe in that tactic of scaring the living fuck out of them to get them to behave a certain way?
No, I think that works more for the masses. If you're trying to come up with a curriculum for you know the general public, but I think I just plan on being very hands on and very limited with you know car usage and stuff. Just a little more hands on educational with that. But it terrifies me. That terrifies me.
Yeah.
My children, because they're little. They're like little kids. So.
Well, that type of emotional scarring.
You're stealing my life from me.
That's what that was Gen X's version of.
Yeah.
I worked in a factory.
Yeah.
When I was your age.
Sure.
You know, it was emotional scarring.
The Freaks and Geeks dad.
Yes.
You know what happened to him? He died. Oh, yeah. My friend Bob got a car. You know what happened to him? He died.
You know what happened when Bob kids was your age? He was dead. He was fucking dead.
Anyway, be home, babe.
Yeah, you should be fine. Yeah, have a good time. Have a good time. Don't wait. I won't wait.
Text me when you get to the house.
Yes, you can. If you think about it. Otherwise, you'll die.
I wonder what the process is now. I'm sure it's changed dramatically.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, you know, we definitely live in a safe space culture.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if red asphalt is just sort of... Maybe it's done with
taboo or something.
Maybe it's done in a very arty way where they've sort of. I'm painting this. This is blood. I'm painting it. I don't know if it's an animated piece.
Right.
Although I feel like you know, especially like you watch
Pixar
like,
is doing the new red asphalt. So like you really care about the characters. So much development goes into the characters that when they die, you really feel it.
It's a new Cars sequel.
Hey, I'm Lightning McQueen.
Oh boy, this one sure did get.
And this is Dennis sitting shotgun. See what happens when Dennis buckles up. Pretty cool, right?
Hey, Mater, tow the Buick off these kids.
I got him. Look out!
Oh boy,
I got stuck in my rear tire. Look at it, you kids. Look at it. Look what Mater did, cause he wasn't safe.
Oopsie. Fucking amazing. Cars red
asphalt.
That
could be cool. I'm hoping that automated cars are all the rage when my
I know some people from Pixar listen to this podcast.
Okay.
I get tweets from them sometimes.
So if you want to pitch for Cars 4, Chris and I are glad to come
John
up.
Lasseter, are you listening?
Huh? Oh, boy. I think they had more than 0.08 in their blood, Lightning.
Yeah, that was terrible. Oh, God. Body parts all over the place. Look at that. I can't race on this track now.
God, we could do that. We could just do this. The technology exists.
I mean.
We could just do this. Oh, my new favorite thing has just been born in the first 5 minutes of this podcast. Holy shit.
I'm very safe on my motorcycle.
Yeah. I was just at Disneyland 2 days ago, too. So the voices are all very fresh in my head still.
I'm seeing all these Halloween time signs everywhere. I won't be able to make it in time, but spoiler alert for my children. I'm getting, because we just moved back from New York, I'm getting everybody annual passes for Christmas, which is very exciting.
Excellent.
Thank you.
It's a good move.
Going for the deluxe.
We go there 5 or 6 times a year.
You've got to be a 33 guy.
Oh, I am.
Yeah. I mean, if you ever want to, like, make a boy's dream come true. just even – you wouldn't even have to, like go there with me if you just said, hey, Terrence, can you buy – he wants to literally poke his head in just to see the door open and poke my head
in. Can Taryn lick the walls?
My friend wants to smell. Can I smell
everyone
your 33
here? Can he smell the –
Hey, yeah. I'm in the brainchild brain trust team for Cars 4.
I'm just doing some research.
Crimson cement. And I love Disneyland.
Well, you should come by. It's really fun because there's that one, and then California Adventure has like a satellite one called 1901.
Yes,
which
right.
is just a great little lounge area you know.
Yeah.
If you want to use the bathroom without, you know.
We just did. I grew up in Southern California, Disneyland, minimum twice a year growing up. Minimum. Like, you know, 8th grade graduation night was there.
Nice.
Senior grad night was there. And was a passport holder for most of my young adult life. And I just, like, literally just went to Disney World for the first time.
Yeah, I haven't been there in eons.
Oh my gosh. Captain EO.
They got rid of him. I remember a few years ago, I took some friends who had never seen. I go, we got to see Captain EO because it's going away.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. And it didn't quite resonate. You know, I think you really just had to grow up with it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, that, I mean, Carousel of Progress, my awareness of it made me excited. And I made our entire group go. And the good, like, all the adults were like, what are we doing? My two-year-old wanted to go three times.
Well, yes.
Yes.
But it just, when you're showing adults who didn't have the experience, and then, you know, Michael Jackson's going, I think you're beautiful on the inside, but without a key to unlock it. You know, and they're like, what is this?
I know.
Yeah. But it's great.
Oh, it's so good. I love it.
I'll take you. It's good. Now's a good time to go. They just opened the train again. The train was closed for a long time.
Okay.
Because they're building Star Wars Land.
I know. So exciting. Have you've seen? Did you go? Did you peek?
You can see Star Wars Land when you get to the peak of Big Thunder Mountain.
Oh, cool.
You can see that they're building it.
Cool.
But the thing that the ride that just completely blew me away, California Adventure's gotten rad.
Yeah.
They refreshed Tower of Terror as the Guardians breakout ride.
Right.
And it is fucking phenomenal because when you walk through the detail.
Yeah, you're in the collector's.
You're in the collector's,
layer, right?
Yeah. And cool. So what they've done is they're going to change the collections as Marvel movies come out.
Gosh.
So right now it's all Asgardian stuff and Thor stuff.
So cool.
And it's all stuff from the movies and just real, like, little Easter eggs of the detail. But the ride is phenomenal.
Cool.
And there's like six different songs that you can get.
Oh,
and it
that's
changes the
awesome.
The tone and the speed of the ride with each one. And it's so much fun. So
that's
you,
amazing.
You have to go.
I have to. I mean, because I have only been on the California Tower of Terror and then at Disney World did the one there at Hollywood Studios where you go into the hallway, and that blew my mind.
Oh, that's great.
Because it was just up and down here, but in Orlando, you go like down the hallway and look around and then come back. It's so cool.
I hear a rumor, too, that they're changing the pier at California Adventure.
Okay.
And it's going to be Pixar Pier, which they already have the Toy Story ride
yes,
there,
Mania.
Which is great. And so it just makes sense.
They're doing the land in Orlando.
Of course, because they have all that room.
Exactly.
God damn it.
Yeah, I know. Star Wars Hotel.
Oh,
we gotta go.
Come on.
We gotta go.
Is it so it is worth it to see? Because I get snobby because I think, well, Disneyland's the original one.
Yes, and
that's,
Walt
that's
was there.
The one that Walt was
totally.
At, you know, but Disney World's still worth it.
We had an amazing time. Epcot is all the reason to go, I think, especially as an adult, because it feels like it was curated with the same care and detail. And I'll be honest, I love that Frozen ride. I'd never been on the fjords of Norway or whatever it used to be, but they changed it into, you know, Frozen, and it's really well designed.
But don't you have to spend several days at Disney World, right? To kind of
that was what. I wasn't disappointed, but I was sort of surprised to discover here at Disneyland is there, and then when California Adventure took over the parking lot, everything's there, and Downtown Disney is right there.
Right.
And at Disney World, I expected that, but 10 times bigger.
Right.
And it is probably more than 10 times bigger, but everything's spread out.
Gotcha.
So it really does feel like you just want to spend a day at each park.
Right.
As opposed to being like, oh, this never ends.
And right.
There's like, you know, Everglades in between.
That's called Disney's Florida Adventure.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a much different experience.
Welcome to Disney's Florida Land Grab. Established in the 60s, we grabbed so much land.
Hey, let's do meth racers. That's where Cars 4 takes. That's where Cars 5 or whatever
exactly.
fucking
yeah,
number
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
I don't even know how many Cars movies there are at this point, but there's
four, right?
There's four, yeah.
I think we're like four will be our red asphalt.
But goddamn it, they sure know how to they really know how to take care of
it's amazing.
Their IP.
Like, yes.
They did great with the Muppets, they did great with Star Wars,
yeah.
They did great with their own Disney stuff, Pixar. They fucking know how to do it.
I know. It's amazing. It really is extraordinary.
Can you imagine just inventing something? That it's like, I don't even know how.
I was obsessed with Neil Gabler's biography of Walt Disney. Have you read that?
No.
Oh, it's sort of like the one, and it's 700 pages long. But it's fascinating because so much is ambition and certainly talent, but just circumstance too. You know what I mean? Like just right place, right time.
Right.
He didn't want to give up on it. He had the right people around him. His brother took care of all the business. He like overspent pretty much his entire life.
Right.
it's extraordinary. The biggest brand ever created in the United States.
But you're right, the timing of it, just to be like right in the film revolution.
To survive the Depression.
Right.
With, you know what I mean? Making content, to thrive, really, you know, thrive during that time as an escape for people who are, you know, have nothing and want to watch three Mickey Mouse cartoons in a row. And
right.
You know, it is really extraordinary. And the quality, the emphasis on quality, seemingly from Walt's side of things, that it holds up. Like, Snow White is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so amazing. And still that opening shot of the foreground and pushing it, you know, all hand-drawn. It's amazing. I love going to ABC because they still have that camera they use for Pinocchio, mm-hmm. like the six-tiered cell camera.
Yes,
it's so beautiful. It's so amazing.
Yes, yeah, so you in Burbank, the
yeah.
Oh my god! And then, yeah, right near the animation building.
Exactly.
That thing is stunning.
It is stunning,
and such incredible. I mean, just like world class painters.
Yes.
Just kind of making it up.
Yeah.
As they went along.
And redoing it so much. You know what I mean? Like the backgrounds or, you know, I don't know what the technical term is, but, you know, the backdrop of a frame, which is like the hills and the houses are truly works of art, are amazing.
Yeah.
And then you have to simplify the stuff because you're drawing 24, you're drawing and painting 24 images for 1 second.
I mean, it's nuts.
That sounds like so much work.
It's a lot of work.
Use
you
a
guys.
Computer.
Come on, Disney. Use
just
a computer.
Get a freaking computer.
Come on, Walt. Just use a computer.
Dork.
Nice try.
It's called bully entrapment.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you want to come use this computer?
Sure.
You're a nerd.
Oh my god.
You dork.
Can I still use it? I gotta show you. I got a bunch of Disney cells downstairs.
Do you?
I gotta show you some fun.
Please.
Did you collect anything?
A lot of Star Wars stuff. A lot of Star Wars toys. I had like, you know, I was a little bit younger. I was born in '82, so I was only one when Jedi came out. But VHS and toys were still all around. So through the '80s, I had a pretty big collection. Then we moved and lost a lot of it. And then in '97, when they started reissuing figures before the prequels, I went pretty crazy.
What's the what's the crown jewel of the collection?
My R2KT figure. Do you know that?
No, which one's that?
From the 501st, there's a father whose daughter was ill, had cancer.
Oh,
lost her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
the R2KT, the pink
one. Yeah,
and I have the action figure still.
Oh, that's incredible.
I love it.
I do. I do know the one. Yeah. I've seen that one at conventions before.
Exactly. They bring the action. Yeah, it's the meaning behind it. And there was an MTV True Life where a dad brought his son to a Star Wars convention. Did you ever see that episode?
No.
It made me cry so hard. It made me cry just because, to me, that's always been sort of the lasting element of Star Wars. Like, I love the movies. I love the characters. I love the dress-up and toy. But the community of it, mm-hmm. of making people believe in something bigger and greater and coming together and lightness and darkness and just the community. I just think that it's a... What other Harry Potter is probably the only other one that I can think of a franchise that affects lifestyles,
or
right?
Like Catholicism.
Yes,
it sounded like you were describing it.
Or my Scientology. Everybody, give me your palms.
A fan.
Just give me your palms, real quick.
I remember my dad. The year before my dad passed away, he lived in Florida part of the year, and Star Wars Celebration was in Orlando. Oh, cool. And so he came, and he'd never been to one of these conventions before. And my dad was not like – he was as far from a nerd as – like he was a dude. You know, my dad was a sweet guy but a dude. He didn't really understand all the stuff I was into. But he spent a day walking around Star Wars Celebration, and he said to me that night, he goes, I understand now why you love this stuff so much.
Oh,
it's so great. And I thought he would go, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What's that thing? Oh, that's that's a rancor monster.
Yeah, that's Moma Nadun, Dad.
What the what?
Hammerhead, Dad, you don't understand me.
Yeah, exactly. And he really, because of the community was so strong and, you know, it was such a great thing.
It's always there's always so much kindness and support and friendship and, you know, it is truly a celebration. So that MTV True Life is like the dad's a nerd and the son's not into it.
Oh.
And the son finally like shows up and dresses up as a stormtrooper with him. He's like, yeah, same thing. I kind of get it. And like the dad's crying because he's I didn't know that we would ever get to share this. And
it
kills me.
Are your kids into it?
No. No, they're both pretty inherently girly, and the oldest is into Harry Potter. That she could get into, which cool. I love as well. But Star Wars is still kind of a boy thing.
What's your house? It's changing. What are you in?
I'm a Gryffindor. I'm a Pottermore certified Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yourself?
No, Ravenclaw.
Ravenclaw, cool. Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, wife's a Slytherin.
It's the wit.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, yeah. It's the snarky. Ravenclaws are the nerds.
You think they're the nerds?
100%. The Gryffindors are the jocks. They always win the fucking house cup.
Jocks for sure. I agree with that. I think they're like... Oh, I never thought... I thought Hufflepuff was much nerdier. Okay, they're the dorks. I'm
say it
sorry.
Too loudly.
No.
So you're going to get a lot of badger hate. A lot of angry badger tweets.
Okay, and then Slytherin's just bullies.
So yeah, they're just bully
just the bullies,
douchebags.
Outcasts.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Although my wife's not a bully douchebag, but she is... I sense the Slytherin in her.
Sure.
You know, especially like when we're watching Investigation Discovery on any of those wives who snapped and murdered their husbands. And
they deserved it.
Well, it's not they deserved it. It's like...
They did it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. It's the critiques. It's the giving of the notes during Snapped.
Too many cracks. Too much of a trail.
Why would you go Fools. Back? Why would you go back to the house?
Always
after
lay
that?
Down a time.
Why would you go back to the house? Why didn't you get a burner phone? Like, burner phone? Where the fuck are you?
Please tell me there'll be a Harry Potter special edition. We're like Slytherin, just in the background, you see kids with a like take a flip phone and throw it into the trash.
Dude, there's a whole other thing we need to make, which is the Investigation Discovery, like oh Muggle murders or some type of a, you know, just some type of a, you know.
Yeah, it's always like, turned out it was the Avada Kedavra.
The Avada Kedavra was delivered at 9:01 p.m.
I heard a disturbance. I was watering the hedges and saw a flash of green light and silence, really.
I remember coming through the flu system and you just never... really prepared, you know, even though you know what you're going to see. You're just never prepared to see a person...
I'm a rookie aura.
...bleed out every cell of their body.
I'm
a rookie aura.
Rookie aura, first day in the job. Horrible. Man killed strictly through sectum sempra. Absolutely awful. Blood everywhere, gashes, forehead to nuts, really. It was just I'll never get out of my mind. It's like the first time I watched Red Asphalt.
Nice! Bringing it back around.
Thank you.
Bringing it back around. Well, we've already come up with two phenomenal ideas.
I know.
In just a short amount of time. Yeah, this is what we were meant to do. God, where do we go from here?
Oh, man. What other things do
I'm
I
just
like?
Depressed.
Pogs?
Pogs?
Slammer? Do a game show about slammers?
Yeah,
game show?
Done.
Do a game show? Slam the slammer?
It's not a bad way to come up with stuff of just like point around a room and go, what do you got? Pogs, but they're weapons.
Yeah.
Okay,
I had
great.
A job similar to that.
Well, oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah.
So if like once a week you had to make like a 90-minute comedy show from scratch that you couldn't
like
really
stressful.
Workshop and it just went on live TV and that was it.
Yeah, could be a thing.
It'll never work.
It'll never work.
Do you probably don't miss that pressure?
I don't miss a lot of the pressure. I also very much miss the thrill and the community. You know, there you'll see like McConaughey just came out with that Wild Turkey 101 commercial. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, you're welcome. Go look that up.
Okay.
And you know, you just see these things. You're like, oh man, it'd be cool if I was still on the show to do that. And you miss the people, and you miss. You know, there's always highs, and then there's always stressful, stroke-inducing stresses.
Of course.
I don't miss the schedule, but I miss the people and I miss the place.
I mean, isn't it interesting this past year, and this isn't even a criticism, but just how much of the show was about two people who are not actually cast members.
I know, sure.
Which is sort of interesting.
Totally. Yeah. And they did
a great job.
So funny. I mean, Melissa is who I would go see Groundling shows for before we even took classes there. That's kind of what it's become. You know what I mean? It's about the guests. It's about the hosts, and it's always been about the hosts. But now cameos are such a fun thing, and it was such a crazy year. It's just such an insane year of things.
Yeah, to do. And, but also interesting that that's kind of what SNL was designed to do, was to comment on what was happening in the world.
Totally.
And then during times where there was like, some news, but not really, you know, like I was really impressed that they said, all right, fuck it. Let's, you know, let's get in there. Let's do it. This is what we were designed to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's there's nothing like it. There's no show like it.
But you wouldn't have had and by the way, I love the cat. I mean, I love Adi Bryant.
Yeah, me too.
There's so many great cast members that I do hope that they are allowed to bubble up to the, you know, and do more of the opening skits and more of the stuff.
I wonder if that'll come back around. Curious, because you know we have the president we have for another 3 years still, and you know, obviously now that it's been, you know, he won the Emmy and stuff, so I think that's, you don't want to just throw that away,
right?
I'm curious, but it's also things always a lot of that show lives in reflection. I think I thought so before I was on the show, and definitely think so now that when you're on the show, you're living episode to episode, and feedback is coming in, like,
sure,
good, bad, you know. But for me, I know the things that I watched the most were, like, you know, the best of or clips online.
Right.
And you always kind of look back at the highlights and the favorites, and through that sort of – through that absorption of the show, you create a different history of it a little bit, I think.
And also, I think the way that people watch SNL is really interesting too, because at certain times in their life, no matter who the current cast is, they always go, but, you know, boy, when Sandler was on, you know, and then when the cast cycles again, they'll go, when Killam was on, you know, like it's always the same sort of thing. It's interesting to hear you say that people like really appreciate the show in reflection a lot of the time.
Lorne does a good job preparing you for that, where he says, like, each cast has their own generation that grows up with them, you know, because it's whatever group of high school students that are getting up to getting to stay up late on a Saturday and watching the show
are
the people who really take ownership. And
then
there are people who are fans all their lives and watch, but it's that generation that sort of owns you that will forever.
But that's an interesting comment about fandom overall, is that I think people forget sometimes, and this is applicable to, you know, Star Wars or Terminator or whatever else is coming out that people grew up with, that when you're a teenager, and it's easier to have your mind blown because you haven't experienced as much.
Totally.
And so when you see stuff and you feel emotions, the connective emotions that you haven't felt before, you really, like, your identity attaches to stuff.
Yes.
It is, I feel like you've spent a lot of your adult life chasing those experiences, but you've already, you've seen so much and your identity's formed.
Totally.
That's why people always go, like, whoa, it's not like the old one. Like, I mean, to you, give a, sometimes people, I think, need to remember that it's, you know, that mechanism is in place.
Absolutely. That, it's their first experience if they've never seen a pratfall or a fart joke, or, you know what I mean, if that's your first fart joke,
right,
then that's probably, you know, and it makes you laugh, then that's going to be the one you compare every other
right
joke. And there's just so many fart jokes out there,
there's,
you know?
And not an infinite
just a
number
vast
of fart jokes,
library of fart jokes, and thank goodness
they're never not hilarious.
That is,
it's funny when the body makes noises
that is incredibly
that
true
you can't control. I really I know, do you fart in front of your wife?
Yeah.
You do?
Oh, God, yeah.
I don't.
You don't, okay.
And so when it happens accidentally,
yes,
I'm at first angry and ashamed that my body has betrayed me in such a way. My wife thinks it's hilarious.
Great.
But I just, I don't feel comfortable just opening the fart gates.
Figuratively and literally, hold on to that. Because all I get are, like, sighs and eye rolls now. Really? Ugh. You got warn me.
That was a warning fart. That was like
shots fired.
Yeah,
everybody out.
There's a bigger one coming.
She's a Bruin.
How is Kobe?
She's wonderful. She's
good.
Really good. Yeah, she just did a Stockholm's comic book convention.
Oh, awesome!
So cool. That sort of thing she did. She did Portugal last year. Just did Chicago, Stockholm. So.
That's great.
Yeah, such a cool, nice lady to be part of that Marvel universe is the gift that keeps giving.
I mean, you must have had some – you must have felt some relief. Because I remember when I saw the movie, that's about to come out, Killing Gunther. I remember seeing the script for it. I think we have the same agent, film agent.
Yes.
And he sent me the script a couple years ago. Hey, you know, Taryn wrote the script. I go, oh my God, this is really fun. This is a really fun idea. Man. And he said, you know, Taryn's wrote it. He's going to direct it. He's going to do everything. And you certainly would not have had time to do that if you were still working on SNL.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah. It was a big part of the decision for it to end was that it was something we would have had that would have been cleared by the show. And now having gone through the post-production of editing and sound, color mix, all that, I don't think I would have been able to. I fully think I would have lost my mind.
And this was the first full-length film that you've directed.
This is correct.
And what did you think about directing before, and what did you learn afterwards?
I was incredibly nervous, and really kind of made it my intention to humble myself as much as possible, as much as you consciously can, while still trying to navigate the creative vision that I had for the project, but always deferring to expertise, meaning production designer, wardrobe heads, saying this is what I think it should be, but I am absolutely open to why that won't work or how it could work better. But very nervous, very, very stressed about schedule and the financing of it. That was sort of like, it shouldn't be a concern, but it is, because people are trusting you with you know, larger sums of money than to shoot a sketch. So you don't want to let them down. I got into comedy probably in part, or am funny in part, to get out of hard work.
Sure. and it's probably the hardest job in the entertainment business.
Exactly. You learn. But it was very important to me to not procrastinate on this, to not wing it. So I worked absolutely the hardest I've ever worked in my life all through prep. And that paid off. That made production such an enjoyable experience with stresses and frustrations and disappointments. Absolutely. But my first AD, Dan Katzman, really looked out for me and took good care of me. And, you know, scouting places multiple times, drawing up shot lists and storyboards for each sequence. And I really did like a film school intensive, even though I directed much smaller things and much, to me, less important things. I just had to know if I could do it, you know? I just was living with the script and the part for so long that nobody had it in their head as much as I did, and people were okay with letting me direct it. So I had to seize that opportunity and see if I could do it.
Did you storyboard every shot before you – like, in other words, was the film basically done and then you just shot it?
For the most part, yeah. For the most part, because it's a mockumentary, so it's done in the documentary format, which is like single vantage point. There were no multiple cameras, right? There was only one camera for a majority of the film. So it was very important to know the blocking and to know the sizing of the frame. And Craig, our first camera operator, like, worked his butt off. He got such a workout because the camera's on his shoulders sometimes for 3-4 minute stretches running, you know, while cars are blowing up and guns are being fired. And so I just wanted to be as prepared as possible with flexibility on the day and changing things up because of lighting or sound issue, you know. But
so just basically, so people know what we're talking about. So Killing Gunther is basically about a group of hitmen who decide to document their hunting and killing of this legendary hitman, who they respect, but it's just sort of they all have a reason to get rid of him, and also just because it's time for
he's
someone
monopolizing
else
to, the industry, so it's exactly time to take out the king,
and everyone kind of has their own area of expertise,
so
it really is almost like a little bit of a D&D party. There's like an 100%. Explosives expert and like a poison expert and guns, and so it's really fun.
Oh, thanks, man.
Really fun.
Thank you so much. We had so much fun making it. I can't believe it's a thing. I can't believe it's a thing that exists. And was always written, you know, I love Dirty Dozen, Magnificent Seven. I love assembling the team, and I love an expert, as you say, you know, G.I. Joe is like a favorite growing up. And it was always written to be as small as possible with my friends, who I think are funny and a little loose and sort of encouraging improvisation, and with like a stunt casting cameo at the end.
Right.
And reaching out through people I'd worked with on SNL and trying to call in a favor. And then the agents call and they say, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is really looking for something like this. And I said, that can't be real. That can't be right.
Something like this, right?
Something like this. Yeah, so you're going to direct him to. And so when he agreed to come and do this thing, it changed many things. It changed the size of the project, changed the size of the role. But it also like shone a bright light on it too. You know what I mean? Like we were really under the, for me, at least for me, like not even necessarily executives, you know, cause it was independently financed, but just for myself, it was like, oh, this got real. Things just got really real.
I have to tell that guy where to stand to do.
And it, to this day, he'll call and we'll talk about stuff. And I will never be like just casual with seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger wants to FaceTime you come up on my phone. It won't happen. And I said that to Kobe after our last conversation. I was like, I'll never be comfortable. That'll never be just like a, hey, I talked to Arnie, you know. And she's like, it'll never be normal for me being in my house, hearing that voice echoing from another room.
Right. And you're never going to go, Arnold, can I just call you later?
Ever.
I'm busy.
I literally turn into a cartoon character, like out of Scooby-Doo, where I'm like, I'm jumping in like opposite directions. And then I run for a little bit with my feet not touching the ground to find like the quietest, most like elegant backdrop, well lit. And there was actually one time where he called and I just was not prepared and I didn't have a shirt on and I like run into the bathroom and I'm sitting on the edge of my tub and I'm like, hey, so things are looking good, you know, I really liked your feedback on it, we're definitely gonna do it. And
are you pooping, Bobby?
No. Oh my god, I wish. He finally called me out. He's like, great, yeah. And I'd like to compliment you on your clavicle. your upper body's looking fantastic. He's so funny, and he was so game for this. He was like, great. Like, the first day we had him in a very sort of compromising outfit, and it was like the first thing we were shooting with him. And he's like, I don't care. It's funny. Yeah, great. Do it.
That's fantastic.
It was so cool. It was the best. It was the best.
Well, you don't know, because sometimes when you're – I think I've had friends who've had the experience of when they're doing a smaller budget film.
Sure.
And then somehow they get like a big star to come in.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not always
– totally.
Great, because that person has a bit of an expectation because mm-hmm. they're used to a certain thing.
Yeah.
And the production is not able to support that thing.
Exactly. No, and there's flexing, and I think I would say the best version of that – is that
I thought you meant literal flexing.
There's
for a
flexing,
second,
you know. There's flexing. There's working out.
There's a split second. I'm like, he does. You got to stand around. And
there's just flexing and there's greasing. There's a lot of greasing.
Sorry to be rude.
There's a lot of squats.
It took a second to go, oh, okay.
You yeah,
mean,
yeah, yeah.
The production.
Posturing. There's a lot of posturing.
Yeah.
And I think the best version is if you have a body of work like Arnold does, a film career. You know the way you like things. You know the way you don't like things. You know how to spot, oh, these guys are idiots. They don't know what they're doing.
Right.
Or this is somebody who, for better or for worse, agree or don't, has a vision and has put in the work. So I think that's part of it. I think part of it is you show up. And SNL, the best training for that. You have the biggest star of movie, TV, whatever, every week. And you have to get over that, do you mind if, you know, you have to be like, hey, listen, this is how it's going to work. This is how I think it's going to be funny. If you have a
get out of my fucking shot, Hanks!
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hanks, you're blowing it!
Oh, what? Sorry.
So Robert De Niro, when you dump this bucket of water on your head, really cheat out.
Okay, yeah, okay. Hey. All right. Yeah, cheer up.
And it's a terrible De Niro, and it's very similar
to
Bruce Willis.
Honestly, though,
it's a
good Bruce Willis. People could have seen the face.
The face always helps.
The face really helped.
And the mole I drew with pen on my face.
Yeah, and then you slicked your hair back. It was kind of gray. You put on a scarf.
I become.
You could put a little mole. Yeah. Everything about it was really
That's
good.
So nice
I think
of
people
you.
Should know that visually
yeah.
we were transported. All right? So, but whatever. I saw because I was at the Emmys and De Niro was there for the Bernie Madoff thing.
Yeah.
And it's so funny that he just seems so not super chill with that. I mean, I wonder if it's that he's not comfortable or he just doesn't like it or
what
it is. But he took it better than I thought he would.
Sure.
And also I saw people coming up to him and he seemed very gracious and he didn't blow anyone off. But
yeah.
But it is kind of funny to be in a business where you are expected to do a lot of these types of public things, then just going, no, I don't want
to
do that.
Yeah, totally. And he's not one to crack wise necessarily.
Was he on SNL when you were on?
He was.
And
yeah.
how was that?
He was kind of like I had heard through like the talent department that he was really doing it because his kid really liked the show.
Yeah.
So he'd been asked multiple times. He'd done it before. Like he's in that Joe Pesci sketch. He makes. Like a surprise cameo. But yeah, he was kind of like, whatever you want. Yeah. All right. Go. You want me to do that? Okay. It's just that, you know what I mean? Just kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And I'll do the best I can. And this is not necessarily my strong suit. But he wasn't difficult by any means.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. He was just kind of like, you tell me. I guess so.
I mean, I guess there are... some people who really just want to be actors.
Like, yes.
I just want to be an actor.
Totally.
I don't want to have to do all the stuff that comes with it.
Yeah.
I'm an actor because I don't want to have to talk as myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not where I'm comfortable.
Exactly.
And I don't really feel like I need to do that.
I think so. And that's fine. And going back to circumstance of things, he and Scorsese at that time and those movies were so impactful and significant. But, you know, small, like they start out making pretty small movies, you know, and so that's a real thrust. You know what I mean? Like Taxi Driver, I'm sure was like a real thrust of, oh, I'm a movie star, I'm a movie icon now.
Yeah, this is really happening.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting for you as a director now, because I assume you will be directing other things, that as you go forward, it's not unlikely that you're going to get someone who, you know, I feel like you almost have to be a psychologist in a certain way.
You're absolutely right.
To sort of get, because you're trying to get people to, you know, do a certain thing so that you can tell your story.
Totally. And I think outside of extreme a-holes who just are having a bad day or week or whatever and don't want to budge, I think people who are difficult or who put up resistance eventually respond to common sense and logic.
Right.
Once it's played out, you know, like to get like frustrated and be like, well, you know, if you don't have the answer that they're looking for, it's going to make things worse. But if you do have the answer or you can act like you have the answer,
right.
I've found that is pretty, pretty easy. Like I remember Woody Harrelson was hosting and we had to shoot promos. And promos are like, you know, the writers are writing them 5 minutes before they go on. They're submitting them, you know, here, watch Saturday Night Live. Because all they want is like 15 to 30 seconds of, here's the host, it's on this Saturday, watch. And it's always kind of the first thing they have the host do to kind of break them in, reading cue cards, being on camera. And Woody was not loving the quality of like jokes and bits that we were doing. And so he's like, I don't know if that's funny. Do you think that's funny? And we're like, oh, well, you know, I think it's funny if you commit to it kind of being stupid. He's like, but if it's stupid, why do it? You know,
described alternative comedy.
Yeah, exactly. No, good points. But it did get a little like sticky where he wouldn't stand in front of the camera. And he's like, no, I'm not comfortable doing something you don't want me to do. And we had to really kind of just talk it down. Like, well, I think what I think the kernel of this idea that is funny is this. And be like, yeah, I see that and work it out. And they ended up being really fun promos by the end of it.
Right.
But I think, you know, he wanted to know that he wasn't kind of being jerked around and that his time was being wasted.
Right. And also because, you know, an actor, I think actors have so much less power than I think people would perceive.
Yes.
You know, because the Academy Awards are the biggest awards show. But really, they're just one part, and the director and the editor and the lighting and the sound, like there are so many other things that have to go right. You know, the director has to choose the right take of the actor or give them the right note to get them in the right emotional place. Totally. And so I just wonder if a lot of them can be a little insecure when they're out of their comfort zone. It's like, am I going to look like a fucking moron right now?
Totally. And I'm sure once you've worked long enough, you have great experiences and you know the feeling that you get inside when, oh, this is working or this has a chance of being good. And you also know, like, oh, this is a disaster. This is going to be awful, you know? I think that's exactly right. Because the process, you're absolutely right. Actors are a piece of a team, a creative team. But the perception and the audience puts all credit and all onus onto whoever's on the screen, whoever they're watching, right?
Right.
It's a bad movie. I think in general, people who maybe aren't necessarily film buffs or reading IMDb or going and breaking things down, they go, that person's face was on the screen and I did not like that movie. It's that person's
that
fault.
That person's fault, right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the tilt of the camera
I think they used a 35 when they could have gone with a 27, you know, really kind of open it up, thin out his face. And why were all the angles Dutch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Too many Dutch angles.
Very few people outside of like, you know, Fantastic Fest or something, you know, we'll say something like that. Yeah. But, you know, I think as a performer, it's probably great to be a director once you've been a performer and probably great to go back to performing once you've directed.
What it made me great at is auditions.
Watching people audition?
Being a kind person to audition for because I had immediate empathy of like, this is a flawed process, and we know right away if you're physically right. We know that we can tweak performances. I know the game. I know what's going on. So that helped a lot. I think it makes it harder to go back to acting, you know, because you just hear and participate in the conversations that are not intending to be mean, but are blunt of, oh no, they're too tall or too short or their hair's too dark or what, you know, the sort of cold calculation of just, we need somebody at this height or we need somebody that with a voice like this. And knowing that as an actor, those people who weren't the right height spent at least 30 minutes to an hour preparing and then getting ready and driving out and giving up their time. All this effort just to either work or immediately be dismissed. So I just always know. And because I'm not in on the conversation on the other side now, like when I go back to auditioning.
Or you just get really like, what are they saying?
My mind is like, what could the conversation be? And that's always, it's like Jaws before you see Jaws.
You know, though, you know? I got to say, though, it, at least you know that it's not personal.
That is true.
It's just like, we just needed someone taller or someone this.
Absolutely.
Or we needed brown eyes or whatever it is.
Totally.
And so, but also this makes me think, you made Bobby Moynihan audition, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay,
sure. He did three or four callbacks. You know,
Bobby,
he got better each time.
This is your movie.
Better each
you
time.
Can, no, I know,
Bobby,
but
it's
I
yours
just
to lose. But Gad is really giving it.
You know, the worst words you can hear from a representative are, I mean, this part's you. Did you got this? Like, don't say
you
that.
You jinxed it.
That's
also not true.
Never gonna get
that's
it.
Not
now.
True.
Never.
No, it went a little bit more like, Bobby, please do everything I ever do.
Please. Bobby was great because I saw him. They did a live Muppet show here at Hollywood Bowl.
I know. I was supposed to go.
And
I was
Bobby
out of town.
Was sort of like the celebrity guest host who was the through line. He was great. The show was amazing.
I bet.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
They basically did it like an episode of the Muppet Show.
So cool.
Tailored to Los Angeles and the Hollywood Bowl.
Ugh.
And they did classic songs. And they did, you know, like they did Menomina. And they did.
Yeah.
But you could see the puppeteers on stage, which they never used to allow.
Right, right.
But then they had video screens. So if you just wanted to see it as a TV show, you could
see
that
too. Cool.
Yeah, Bobby was great.
I was supposed to go and then got called out of town and couldn't make it. And Bobby is one of my dearest friends, will be for forever. I love few people more than him. And I know how much this show meant to him, too, because he's such a fan. And so, like, I was in Atlanta and saw a clip of them singing Rainbow Connection. And I just started weeping.
Yeah,
I just lost it.
It was beautiful. It was really
cool.
Great.
That's
and
so cool.
Rainbow Connection, they did fireworks. The whole thing was incredible. Wow. And they even did a parade of, like, like obscure Muppets just for the hardcore Muppet fans, and they basically just sort of paraded around in a circle and walked off stage.
That's awesome.
Yeah, with the whole thing was great. But he was great. Also freshly off SNL.
Yeah, yeah, and his show,
the John Larroquette
has premiered.
Oh, by the time this comes
out,
yeah.
I think, right? Yeah, I can't wait. And he's having so much fun, and he would tell me if it wasn't good. Yeah, he would be honest.
Yeah.
And I'm not savvy enough to – I'm already deep enough in this conversation to not pull back. But, no, he's having a good time, and he really loves it. And he's out here, which I don't think he ever thought he would be, because he's, you know, born and raised in New York and has sort of been a New York lifer. But he's out here. I got to bring him with me.
And we got that one-sided war with New York out here.
Yes.
Where New York, like, fuck you, L.A. And L.A.'s like, what?
I know. And it's interesting spending time on both. Those are good. Those are great personifications of the coasts, by the way.
I wasn't even.
Hey, you dummy.
What?
Hey, get that guy here.
You seem angry. I'm mad.
But the weather.
Why so mad? The weather is great. Pat Oswalt once pointed out a really great point about Los Angeles. People go, oh, but it's so beautiful, Los Angeles. He goes, people are talking about the sky. They're not. He goes, look at the buildings.
That's true.
It's like, it's a really ugly city.
Right.
But when you look up, oh my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah. No, totally true. I was born and raised here and then lived in New York for 7 years. And it's just what you're used to. I think it's really what you're used to. The big difference is our layout. But there's both kinds of people in both places. And there's both.
Like city wars are so funny to me. Is it because people go, what? Like, so I guess everyone in LA is like real shallow, right? And go, you know, every city has shitty parts to it.
This is where Fashion Week happens. Soho is only models. What are you talking about? Soho is just Equinoxes and Soul Cycles and models.
In really old looking buildings and cobblestone streets.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you just go, no, every city, and I always try to go, you know, every city has stuff that's not great, and you just find your friend circles, and you go to the places, and then it's every city's fine. Every city is fine.
Yes.
You can find your own way in any city.
Exactly right.
But, you know, but LA is in a one-sided war with a lot of, it's the best.
But LA is the best.
Yeah, but it's the best, and every other city can suck our balls and clits. the same. But it San Francisco kind of has that with LA, and the Pacific Northwest has it with LA, basically. Yeah. And we're an easy target.
I know.
Yep. But,
roughly so. But it's also so big. And I think that that's the best and worst thing about it is that if you're not familiar, where do you go? How do you get there? You know what I mean? You can be isolated so fast.
Yeah.
So much more so than New York, I think, because everything's on top of each other, of itself. But you can breathe. Like, I can breathe. I can get out. I know I can be in the mountains in 2.5 hours. I can be at the beach equally as fast and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, basically, all the cities just need to come together.
Come on.
And make fun of Florida.
There is a city. Yeah, exactly. TikTok. We are the cities, except for Florida, which is a state.
My mom. Yeah, it is. It's a city state.
Yeah.
My mom's from Miami, and I lived in Florida for a little while when I was a kid. And my dad lived in Central Florida, for part of the year. So it's, I like to poke fun at Florida, but it's not that bad. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. I had never been there before going to Disney World. So Disney World is literally all I know of Florida.
Did you hit any of the other parks? Did you go to
We did. We did all of Disney World and then we did Universal.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That is a full trip.
It was my gift to myself. The goal was always to finish my run on SNL. And then my last episode, Taron Killam, you just finished your run on SNL. Where are you going? I'm going to Disney World. and so it got delayed a little bit, but it was more for me than my children, really.
Sure.
But they loved it. And boy, that Wizarding World out there is extraordinary.
Yeah, because the one here is not a lot of space.
Nice.
It's great.
It's Hogsmeade.
It's Hogsmeade, and then there's two rides. And I think they took one of the rides is the same as the one in Florida.
Got it.
But
have you been to Orlando?
No, I haven't been to the one in Orlando yet.
First of all, Universal Studios Orlando is a theme park, right? This is like an annex to a working movie studio, and that's why my favorite thing's always been the Backlot tour,
because
it's so exciting. But this is like a theme park. That's its only purpose. And Springfield there is amazing and sprawling, and there's a whole road. and they have this great Men in Black ride, which is so fun and cool. And then you walk up and you're on a London street and you see 12 Grimald Place, and there's a little creature in the window looking out and going back in. It's discolored because it's stretched out of the building. And then you walk into this little brick alley, and it's Diagon Alley, but it's all of it.
Oh,
it's
shit.
Diagon Alley. It's a street over. You go around. You can go into Nocturne Alley. It's huge. It's and you can go in all the stores. My daughter did Ollivander's, and like we got this special little sneak thing in the back. And there's like, I've been waiting for you. And he takes down wands. They have the little animatronic things that shoot out of the walls. And no, that's too powerful.
Right.
And then the right one goes in her hand, and a spotlight comes, and a wind machine blows.
And then they go that'll be $79.99.
Yeah.
I mean, what's genius about it is that when we went to the one here, yeah. I was like, wait a minute, this is just a Harry Potter themed mall. It's brilliant.
Yes.
She wrote, like, it's in the book.
It is. It's the first thing.
That's where they
go
shopping.
It's the first part of the book.
It's a fucking mall.
It's all merch.
Oh, God. It's so brilliant.
Harry Potter and the merch.
It's so brilliant. It makes me angry how brilliant it is. Because everything. And then the wands that you buy there, there are certain spots where you can stand on and,
exactly.
like, make things happen in shop windows or open things. And,
yes.
And it that like, it's such a stroke of...
It's brilliant. And then there you can go to King's Cross, walk through, and it's amazing where platform 9 3/4, people waiting in line are looking at you through a glass pane.
Yep.
So when they're watching, they see a brick wall there, and you see bodies disappear into this column.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then
awesome.
When you leave, because it's projected on the glass, it's so brilliant. And you go on the Hogwarts Express, and you sit in a compartment, and they take you, and then you go to the other park, Islands of Adventure, and it delivers you at Hogsmeade. And
Fuck.
You see how it was so impressive.
I think we're going to have to.
It was so impressive.
We're going to have to make the trek
really
down there.
It's really fun. It was really fun. It was a great trip. And we just drove from New York to LA. We did like a whole cross country after that. Like we did our Florida trip, and then we rented an RV, a 30-foot RV, and we drove through 15 states over 10 days. And
oh, wow.
Back here. It was so cool.
And no, like, no disaster, no.
No, really lucky. Really, like, well-planned, you know, like, I, you know, plotted out our course, and we veered in the Ozarks, but, you know. You know how the Ozarks are.
I'm familiar.
Have you heard of Silver Dollar City?
No.
It is a Western frontier-themed theme park. So it's not Sperry Farm, but really leaning into cowboys and mining, and that was a discovery that I will... Definitely go back.
All right, experience. We'll go. We'll go.
Let's go. What are
Let's
you doing
go.
Right now?
Right now. No, I'm going to that.
Let's freaking go to Silver Dollar City. Southwest Missouri.
People just here and then.
Welcome to Silver Dollar City.
Yeehaw.
Here's your silver dollar.
Hey, you got a couple tenderfoots in here now.
Is this a real Western authentic roller coaster?
Yeah, that's right. Not safe at all.
It's just like built.
What's a seat belt? Held together with horseshoes and chaw.
Oh, I don't feel like. And all the car, all the mining carts are basically just.
Whoa.
Oh wait,
what
oh,
happened?
No, that's the. There's oh nothing. I just I'm having
There's
a
truck coming in.
Yeah, he was doing some wallpapering, but I have a any minute now. My wife's birthday was yesterday.
Happy belated.
Happy belated. And one of the things I got her, she loves pinball.
Oh,
and
cool.
We have an arcade downstairs, so I got Simpsons Party Pinball, which is a fucking great pinball machine.
That's awesome.
And so it's being delivered.
Okay.
Like any minute
okay.
now. Any
cool.
minute now.
Oh, that's exciting.
There's Simpsons Party Pinball. So I thought for a second, I was like, is the pinball man here? The pinball man's here.
Excuse me, I have to go. That's my Sunset Riders.
So what are you doing now? Now that when Gunther comes out,
yes, I will direct again. I'm starting to write that thing, but that's early stages. I'm currently flying back and forth from Atlanta doing this Kevin Hart movie,
mm-hmm.
Night School, which is very very fun, and then trying to sell a TV show out here, which will be sort of the next business affair.
Nice. Like a networky sitcom.
I wouldn't mind streaming.
Nice.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind a binge experience.
It all works now.
Yeah.
Like it's all
it's
you know. Like Hulu's winning awards.
I know.
Amazon. Like it doesn't really.
It's true. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be network anymore.
No. And you know, not to jinx anything, but should people get excited, it's nice to know. Yes, here's your chunk. It's happening, and sort of circumvent the. will it get shot? Will it get cast? Will it get picked up? Will it get put on a night?
Focus group it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, we have to take your show to a mall.
Right.
And we have to ask a bunch of people.
Can it be a Harry Potter mall? I had so much fun there the last time. There's not enough magic.
Your show does it very well with house elves 4 to 6. That's your big demo.
Yeah.
Basically, they loved it.
Yeah.
Yay. Everyone else... I don't know.
We're frustrated that you were wasting their time at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
I have a very important question to ask you, which is, if you were a professor at Hogwarts, what would you teach?
Oh, fun. What my heart is like to be like the flying instructor, because I'd like think in my mind like, oh, I can be good at flying.
Yeah.
But I do have a love for charms.
Oh.
I think charms can be more powerful than we are sort of
more led useful on to day be. To day.
You know what I mean? Yes. Yeah. Well, and look at Horcruxes and all. Yep. You know what I mean? Charms could be pretty dope.
So you want to murder to splinter your soul?
Yes. Yes.
I'm so excited that you are as into these things as much as I am, because people always say like, oh, you're going to make a great dad because you're into this stuff. And then I feel like, yeah, but if I'm into it, I'm afraid my kids aren't going to be into it because I'm into it, and they're going to rebel. And then I have to teach them not to be into the Kardashians. And I don't know how, how do you?
Sure.
And I'm like, no, watch these wizards.
Yeah. There is. There. I think there'll always
Speaking
be
Speaking of Horcruxes.
Yeah.
How many times have they... How many?
We've put our soul into another reality show. We have to destroy these 17 reality shows.
My soul's in a makeup line.
We destroyed the Pepsi Horcrux.
Yes. Oh God, that's the blackout line right there. That's where the scene just ends and the crowd erupts. Oh fuck, that's.
Danny Chris.
That's fucking fantastic. The good news is that we absolutely should make something together.
Please.
Even if it's just an Instagram video.
Yes, please.
But this has been so much fun.
Yeah.
When is Killing Gunther? What is the date?
October 20th. In theaters, October 20th.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then available on demand everywhere.
I demand.
Everywhere.
I demand.
If you demand it enough, it will happen.
I demand to see Killing Gunther right fucking now.
Here you are.
Let me see the manager. But I gave it to you. I just want to see the manager. I'm that guy.
Sorry, is it available on video on request? No, sorry, you have to demand.
Demand, god damn it.
Sorry.
I want to fucking see
it. It's not a polite movie.
I need to see this movie right now.
Would it be okay if I? No.
No!
What,
get out!
What do you not understand about
get
on
out!
Demand? What do you not understand? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Please tell your wife I said hello.
I certainly will.
And we'll have a little Club 33 adventure.
That would
one
I
of
mean
these days.
Literally that would be the greatest.
I promise we're going to go again later in the year when the Christmas decorations go up.
I will.
So
die.
We'll get a nice little.
If you want to see me dead. In a good way.
Interesting. I wouldn't get blamed for that. It's a perfect crime.
Here on Forensic Wizards. He was a muggle who had a dream. That dream was to go to an exclusive theme park dining club.
Can a joy charm kill, we say. Can a joy charm kill, we say yes.
You know, I'm a ghost now, but I'm not mad at Chris. It was
my
dream.
I need to tell people what you're doing.
I'm floating.
You were moving your body around like you're...
You know, my soul is eternally trapped here at Club 33, and I don't know of a better way to go.
That's so, like, that. What I love about that is, like, that is years of comedy training of just still doing the space work, even on an audio podcast. God damn
muscle
it.
Muscle memory. Comedy
that's
muscle
so
memory.
Fucking fantastic. Oh, well, that's a perfect place to end. And now I cast Enjoy Your Burrito. The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history.
Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.